Delete the words law enforcement purposes including, so the paragraph, subparagraph two would be criminal investigations and prosecutions. Ms. Carpinetti.
I would just be, I'm sorry, were you going to add to that? I'm just concerned about identification purposes.
Right, I think we had that discussion.
Okay.
You want not want to do that because other than criminal identification for criminal purposes, you're not intending to include that?
That's correct.
Right. So you could use it for identification if you felt that there was a crime, but not if it was just to accommodate someone saying, who am I, with amnesia.
The problem is that if you find a body part or a human body and you don't know, have any idea whether it's a criminal prosecution or not, that would
you
be
would have that, wouldn't you have that right up under the under line 8 that we just modified?
That's for inclusion in the DNA bank.
Okay.
And that allows, but it would be, I think it would be important for a purpose to say law.
If we did say there, then under 2, to determine the identity of unidentified human remains, criminal investigations, or prosecutions, would that satisfy that concern?
Yes.
Senator Ogden, do you have a problem with that?
Problem with that.
Would you
say it again? I'm sorry.
Would you restate your proposed amendment then?
Just did.
Okay. Line subparagraph two would be
unidentified
human remains, comma, criminal investigations, comma, and prosecutions.
I think in order to make it a sentence, I'm sorry to be picky, I'd be glad to work on it. I think we need a verb there for identifying.
Identifying unidentified human.
Or something like that.
Yes.
Identifying human remains.
I was just thinking you can have my DNA when you pry it from my cold, dead body.
That's a Senator Hogan ism.
Okay. Actually, I let them have mine. If they can find some anomaly that I can correct, I'd be glad for them to do it. But, so we would use a verb in there. For determining the identity of unidentified human remains, comma, for criminal investigations and prosecutions.
Yes. So there would have to be
identification.
Conceptually, does that work with everyone here?
I think that conceptually works, although, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ogden, for the record.
Senator Ogden, go ahead.
We already have that. The department may also collect inclusion of DNA registration in the blood sample, oral sample, tissue sample from a crime scene or from an unidentified person.
As I understand it, that's what can be
collected
into the data bank, and this lower paragraph is how you can use the data that's collected
okay.
in the data bank.
Thank you.
Am I correct?
You're correct. And if you would, if you wanted to do a conceptual amendment, I would work with the words and then show them to you if you wanted to do that.
Is that all right? We've got that concept in there. We can use it now for unidentifying unidentified human remains. Okay. Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Is there other discussion on the bill?
May I bring one? I don't know that I don't know whether I'm in a position to do this, so tell me to be quiet if I'm not. But there's a mini addition that I would suggest on line 14 of page 2, and that
Please
is
go ahead.
On line 14, somebody from DPS, Diane Schenker, brought this to my attention, that in the sex offender registration program, we call them sex offenders and child kidnappers because the federal government requires us to call them that, and so we do that. So I would suggest after sex offender, adding or child kidnapper on line 14.
Is there an amendment? Senator Terrio?
Okay.
I'll move that as amendment number 3.
Amendment number 3 would be to insert in line 14, page 2, after sex offender or child kidnapper. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. It's never out of line in this committee to try to make a bill better. Okay? Is there other discussion? Senator Ogden?
Well, the only thing I'd like to see to make the bill better would be to make it for felonies rather than misdemeanors. And I understand the connection, but I would remove any objection I have. I think this is a better bill now, but I would remove any objection I have if we were just dealing with felonies.
And in some respects, I would agree with that, Senator Ogden. I understand that, but by being able to use the cold hits theory from Virginia, misdemeanor drug offense could, if it can identify a sex offender, a murderer, I'm willing to take that little extra step. I don't like some of the ominous portions of it, just for sake of discussion. I don't object to them using my DNA. I think as long as I'm around in this body, I would have, and I hope that those who follow us would do everything they could to make sure that it's, I would make it higher than a Class C felony to someone to violate DNA privacy myself. But I would hope that in the future that other legislatures would continue to do their best to identify or not to hold privacy issues to a very, very, very high standard, and but yet I want to get the scumbags off the street when it comes to protecting my family without unnecessarily sacrificing my freedoms as an American citizen. I think we're at a point of balance here where I feel comfortable, but I appreciate your concern, and I share that concern, and I applaud you for it. I really do. Senator Ogden.
I think there are those that would, maybe I can tie a parallel to another issue. There are those, and myself included, that are willing to take some risks of being possibly assaulted by or shot by a criminal with a gun. And some people would say, well, let's just eliminate guns and that'll take care of crime. And I'm willing to make some sacrifices to live in a free society where I feel that I can keep and bear my arms. And I think that has a lot to do with going back to not becoming a tyranny. And so I'm willing to take some risks by not having misdemeanors collected, you know, DNA samples collected from misdemeanors, because misdemeanor crimes are a different level of crime. They're not as serious. We treat them differently. People don't lose their rights by committing misdemeanors. It's a whole different classification. So
appreciate
you. My support for the bill.
I appreciate that.
Will be contingent upon.
With that in mind, those comments in mind, is there further discussion? What's the will of the committee? Senator Terrio?
I would move the Senate Judiciary Committee version of the bill from committee with individual recommendations and my fiscal notes we have here.
Is there objection?
Multiple.
Senator Ogden objects. Call the roll. Mr. Hove?
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Ogden?
No.
Senator Terrio?
Yes.
Senator Zekins?
Yes. Thank you for being with us today. Where do we go next, Mr. Hove, here?
175,
tab 4. As you set up for this, if you'll just take a brief at ease long enough for me to walk down the line. 175, when we left here, we were discussing that our friend Senator French wanted to make sure that bungee jumping and parasailing was covered. And you'll notice, Senator French, on page 3 on line 22, that bungee jumping and parasailing are now, so if you want to go jump off a bridge, I'll come take pictures, but I won't join you.
All my amendments were met with such warmth and
I won't join you, but I will watch and take pictures. Okay, further discussion is closed to public testimony. We're now considering it by the members of the committee. And
we did have one guy,
Mike Windred, online. I guess we did not close it. We had Mike Windred. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you're right there. Okay, would you please come up and put yourself on the record, and we'll go from there.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Mike Windred with the Alaska Travel Industry Association, past president of the Juneau chapter, and I work for Alaska Travel Adventures for a little over 20 years now. And thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill. Some of you have probably heard me speak on it in previous years or similar bills. I'm very much in support, and the industry is very much in support of the recreational liability bill. I'm speaking on behalf of one of the, not only the industry, but one of the larger companies. So I want to give some perspective with regards to a large adventure tour provider. And we do quite a few adventure tours. But most of the businesses in ATIA or in the travel industry, about 90% are five or fewer employees, which means they have much less of an ability to absorb increases in insurance costs, et cetera. And rather than tell you about a lot of specific incidences, I guess this year I wanted to point out that one of the primary things is that as nuisance suits go up and insurance rates climb, and ours went from about 10% of pre-tax profits to almost 13% of pre-tax profits this year, and we're a fairly large company, that what that really does is it means that most of our employees are not going to get substantial pay raises because the money has to come from somewhere. And most of the rest of our costs are fairly fixed. So this bill would definitely help us have the ability to give employees some of that money that we had planned on pay raises, myself being one of them, from profit sharing and retirement at the end to just pay raises by the ability to control nuisance suits and the cost of nuisance suits. Anyway, I think the bill is very well written, and I guess I would open myself up to any questions if you have any.
Senator Ogden.
Thank you. Now, I was reading, and I didn't catch all of what you're a provider of these kind of services?
Yeah, we do everything from river rafting to mountain lake canoeing, hiking tours, some sedate products like the salmon bake here, and gold panning tours, which seem fairly sedate, but people trip on rocks and suddenly they can't have children anymore.
No. Senator Ogden.
Thank you. Do you think you have, if this law is passed, that you have any responsibility to inform people that are using your services that they're the ones that are they're taking this at their own risk, and that under state law that there's you have certain liabilities that you're not going to be held to?
Through the chairman, yes, I think we do have a responsibility to inform participants of the inherent risks, especially if we have certain activities that do have more risk involved, like whitewater rafting, for instance. That is part of what we do for those activities, is inform the participants that are paying for them of what those inherent risks are, and they sign off on a sheet that says they understand what those risks are, and we keep track of those sheets for quite a while.
Senator Ogden. Mr. Chairman, those sheets are basically a waiver. So a waiver is kind of more of a psychological contract than a binding contract. That okay, these are the risks. Don't sue us. But at the end of the day, they can sue before we pass this. Is that correct?
Through the chairman, our sheets are not waivers. Our sheets are basically risk assumption sheets, where we explain to them both verbally and in writing what the risks are that are inherent to the activity, and they sign off on the fact that they've acknowledged what those risks are and have been told about them, and have the opportunity not to go at that point if they don't. So we don't have anything in our sheets that says they're releasing any rights to be able to sue us, because I don't think we can do that in reality.
Right.
Senator Ogden.
Which makes my point that maybe a psychological waiver, more or less, that there's this, at least a handshake understanding that. And I'm leading up to that, Mr. Chairman, by suggesting that we might want to put something in this bill that if we're going to exonerate people from a liability, especially someone that's paying a commercial, paying for a commercial activity, that they do it with a culpable mental state, that they go and they understand that, look, Alaska state law holds these people harmless under these circumstances and enter at your own risk, literally enter at your own risk. And I think you might have a moral obligation to do that as a state, to require that people go into these trips and go into these high-risk activities, the understanding that certain levels of negligence are going to be, you're not going to have any recourse.
Appreciate that. How I look at this bill is that it's basically limiting any liability of the providers of these sport events to negligence that's not associated with the inherent risk of the activity. For example, if you're going to go mountain climbing, you might, if you got a hold of a rock and that rock comes loose and you fall backwards and you fall down the hill, that's an inherent risk of the activity. Now, if equipment that they provide to you was not maintained properly and fails, there's still liability for that negligence. And in this case, we basically only said that this action does not apply based on the negligence of the provider. We've made that very clear. And we have not provided for a waiver to be totally effective against the provider in this bill, as in some other limitation bills that we've looked at, where you can sign a complete waiver of liability. But we have said that that nothing in this bill renders ineffectual a liability release. So we haven't said that this bill affects the liability release statutes one way or the other. What I'm looking at is, I'm not totally against it, but I'm not a supporter of saying, well, geez, someone provided me with this statement, and they'll say, oh, well, I could say, you got hurt. You were water rafting with me, and you got hurt somehow or another. And I say, well, I provided him with the statement, and you say, he did not. In effect, unless there's a signed waiver of some kind or a signed statement of some kind that's kept on file, it's my word against yours, your word against mine. And I don't know if we want to set up somebody having to keep thousands of signed statements that they understand that they're assuming the inherent risk or not. So I understand some states will have signs up. Other states won't. Some states that put up signs up say, somebody tears the sign down and 500 people went through today and nobody knows that the sign was torn down. So where is that notification? And I think what we're trying to do is, from a common sense standpoint, say the people who are going to go parasailing or bungee jumping better understand that it is an inherently dangerous activity. But so unless the provider was negligent, you don't have any coverage. Senator Ogun.
I might, Mr. Chairman. I think people are retaining services for these types of things. Do it with some reasonable assumption that not only do they hire them to show them where to go, but they have people accompanying them in the field with a reasonable assumption that that person has experience in operating a raft in whitewater, or that knows, can brief people on the dangers of downdrafts when they go parasailing or show them how to pack their parachute, or show them how, to deploy their reserve chute, or these types of things. And if there's some negligence in that instruction and all that, then
they're liable.
Pardon me?
If they're liable if there's negligence in the instructions that they give to someone, they're liable under this bill, as I see it. Am I reading that wrong?
I'm not sure.
The way I read the bill, if they act negligently, they're still liable. But if strictly we went on a hike, and as was mentioned earlier, someone tripped on a rock. Mr. Ford, maybe I see your body language. You may have something to add if you'd come in and and put yourself on the record for us. We'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Ford, Division of Legal Services. And there's a provision in the bill, page 3 in C1. It specifies negligence of a provider that was not the result of the inherent risk.
I believe
that's what you're talking about.
Correct. That's what I'm talking about. Am I correct in my assumption there? If they're negligent in how they brief the person, they have assumed negligence.
Well, if the injury that occurs is not a result of an inherent risk,
correct,
then those things are not protected.
So if someone tripped on a rock on a hike, the inherent risk of going on a hike is you might trip on a rock.
Correct.
And you wouldn't have had to told them, please pick your feet high enough to not trip on rocks.
Correct.
Senator Terrio.
Or if going on the hike, the guide led you down a trail that was,
he knew was
prone to avalanche or
floods.
Or that was beyond your capabilities.
Correct.
Okay.
I think the case comes to mind is that UAA.
Senator Ogan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The case that comes to mind is the UAA climbing school. They all went up there, and I don't know the particulars about it. It's over and done with, I'm sure. But let's not talk about that case. Let's say that somebody wants to go climbing, or climbing instructors. That's especially technical climbing is pretty risky, and I think somebody made some mistakes. And I don't know the particulars of the case, but I know people died and a lot of people fell, and there was quite a bit of discussion about what happened. So if somebody instructed somebody wrong on, you're supposed to put this kind of little thing in the rock that holds you up, I don't know what they're called.
Piton
in the rock. And they instruct you to put the wrong piton in there, and a whole bunch of people fell. Is that an inherent risk? And a lot of this is subjective because it's judgment calls. Well, that crack looked like it was an inch wide, but it was really an inch and a quarter wide, and I put the one for an inch in. And where do you get into the hair splitting on that kind of stuff?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you've hit one of the key issues here, which is it's easy to state the rule, and sometimes it's very hard to apply it. And reasonable minds, of course, can differ on what would be an inherent risk. Seems to me, I can certainly give you my opinion on a number of fact situations, but I don't know if the court would agree with me or another reasonable person. It is hard to do, and that's why this kind of legislation is hard to craft, because the rules that we have occur in real fact situations, where real people exist and you have a set of facts to apply to the situation. But to come up with a rule that applies to all situations, you run into what I call the generic language, to say inherent risks, you're not liable for inherent risks. Well, what is an inherent risk? Again, we have a definition of it. Dangers or conditions that are characteristic of, intrinsic to, or an integral part of the sport. It's easy to say that, but then you come down to saying, well, does that mean proper instruction on how to tie a rope when you climb the mountain? I would say that is one of the integral parts of rock climbing, and if someone gives you the wrong instructions, that wouldn't be an inherent risk. That'd be negligence.
Okay.
All right. Well,
that Senator Terrio.
Mike, on page 2, line 29, person assumes the inherent risk of the sports or recreation activity, whether those risks are known or unknown. But isn't the basis for this that you're going skiing or white water rafting and you know it involves cold water, you know it's going to involve waves? Why do we have that language in there?
You know, I understand your concern. I think what they're trying to say here is we're not going to depend on the knowledge of the person who participates. It's more than that. In other words, if you go whitewater rafting, but you don't happen to be aware that whitewater rafting is dangerous. I think that's what that means, is that a person who participates, whether the risks are known or unknown to that person.
Okay.
But I agree. This wasn't my language. I think that we are assuming an inherent risk is something you know about. Otherwise, it wouldn't be inherent.
Do you know where that language came in?
I think it came from the lady in Anchorage who, I believe, came up with a rewrite of the original bill. I believe.
Yeah.
Ms. Anderson, could you correct
this? That's where the language came from.
Put yourself on the record just a moment for us so that we know. Or you can just stand by if you would.
Certainly. Linda Anderson, lobbyist for Alaska Travel Industry Association, and this language did come from an attorney out of Anchorage who has tried a number of cases, and so it was her experience that was necessary. Can't speak for her as to specifically why, but...
So there could be inherent risks that someone might not know about. So in that regard... It would be incumbent upon, if it said known risks, someone would have to have a long list of things that people would have to be known, they'd have to know about before they went on the trip.
I would certainly make that assumption.
Thank you. Senator Ogden, then Senator Terrio.
I think a good example of that would be people that get on a whale-watching trip here in Alaska, and they don't know if they go into water, they're only going to be alive about 20 minutes, depending on their body fat and their condition, you know. Because hypothermia will kill them. And if they're from Florida, they probably, if you go in the water there, you can survive, dip for days if the sharks don't eat you. You know, if you can stay afloat. So, you know, there's unknown risks I think people take when they get in an airplane and in a float plane, and the law requires that they have flotation devices. You know, some operators might require they put them on, some not, but they might not know that. They land that plane and wave comes up over the floats, or float breaks, that airplane, it's all going to go downhill in a hurry. If they don't have their life jacket on, they're dead, you know, or will survive. So there's a lot of things that are impossible, I think, to try to educate people on.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out in my mind how this works. If I take a flight sim trip, I know a plane can crash. But I don't know that day particularly that the weather is such that the dew point is right at the spot where fog would form. The provider should know that and take that into account. But if I knew all that detail, maybe I wouldn't get on the plane that day. So I'm just wondering how that all comes into play here.
What I think we're doing is trying to get to common sense. Maybe that's hard to define. And common sense sometimes is different for one person than another. It took me a lot of hours to get a pilot's license so I could understand and assess the risks. I'm not sure we could, in a very short period of time, be able to give someone all the risks of a particular activity, but go ahead, Senator.
Well, Mr. Ford, how would the language work, or what would be lost if that sentence fragment were deleted?
Senator Turner, I don't think it would greatly affect the bill. And I do agree that it does raise this issue, whether those risks are known or unknown to who. I assume it means the person who participates. And I would think that if it's an unknown risk, you know, you raise the question, is it inherent? But I would have no problem deleting that language, and I'm not sure how, you know, anyone else would feel, but I don't think it would do material harm to the bill.
So you're suggesting, Senator Terrio, that we rewrite that paragraph as a person who participates in a sports or recreation activity assumes the inherent risk in that sports or recreation activity and is legally responsible for all injuries or death to the person, so on and so on?
Yeah.
So we would be deleting the language after activity and through the next comma. So we'd be leading two commas, and then whether those risks are known or unknown. Is that how you would do it?
That would be correct, Mr. Chairman.
Are you proposing that as an amendment, Mr. Theriault? Senator Theriault?
Mr. Chairman, I think I will. Yes, I'll make that as amendment number one.
One would delete the language between the comma after activity and the comma after unknown. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ogun.
What's that? You ready for a motion?
I am, sir.
I move CS for Senate Bill 175, Judiciary, / S from the committee with the attached zero fiscal note and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This bill's moved on. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
I like the bill. Good bill. Yeah.